Okay, man, so you just learned about GPU and D2D, and it's just so powerful. We're in Building 41 now, just like that, with some very esteemed people. Please introduce yourself.
I'm John Montgomery. I'm the GPM of the Browser Programmability and Tools team.
I'm Steve Lucco. I'm the Chief Architect of the same team.
And I'm Sean Kuniyoki. I'm a General Manager of the same team.
Excellent. So when we were in the IE building, we were talking about performance improvements, security, compatibility. All of those things resonate with your team, the JavaScript engine, JScript engine, JavaScript engine, right?
Yep.
JScript's no longer or something. But so let's talk about what you guys have done.
Cool. Well, we've been working on a bunch of performance optimizations around the JavaScript engine for the next version of IE. One of the things we've heard pretty clearly from customers is we need to get better there. So we've done a bunch of work in the core JScript engine, and I'd actually like to show you that stuff so you can see some of the progress we've made.
Absolutely.
And then we can have a conversation about some of the work we actually did to do that.
So cool.
Let me do a couple of quick things.
Excellent.
The first one is I'm going to fire up a quick build of Internet Explorer here that has our engine in it, just to show that this is real. I don't know how close you can get, but this build was done this morning at 10 a.m. of the JScript DLL. So it's fresh bits. And I will pull it up. And before we actually get into SunSpider, let me just show you that this is actual real working software, because obviously one of the hardest things about this is compatibility. So actually getting the web to run. So what I'm showing here is kind of logging into my Hotmail account. I'll send a piece of mail to myself running on this new JavaScript engine. And I'll send it to my Gmail account. And I'll just say, hello, Channel 9. And we'll put some text in here. So there's some text in here and some typos. And I can actually, it does pretty much everything. We're talking about, you can see the little red squiggly here on the spell check and so on. And I will send this message off to my Gmail account. And let's quickly pop over and sign into my Gmail account. So that's mail.google.com. And you'll see Hello Channel 9 sent moments ago. And I can compose a piece of mail. I can reply to this one. Why don't we just compose a new piece of mail? Hello Channel 9, back at ya. Except my spelling.
Back at ya. I like that.
Yeah, whatever. I'm a classic.
That's a good one.
Nerd.
Right on.
So we'll have some more spelling errors in here. And again, that's probably the single biggest thing here. I mean, these sites, although we use them every day, they're pretty significant sites in terms of testing compatibility. They're downloading tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of lines of JavaScript code.
Wow.
That we're executing here. So it's a pretty good test of the compatibility. But it's really hard to get a sense of the improved performance we have in the engine from this. And there is a benchmark that is used pretty commonly to actually test this. You can argue about whether it's a good benchmark or a bad benchmark or whatever, and it's certainly only one dimension of browser performance. Right now we're just focused on performance of the script engine. And it's called SunSpider. And it just runs through a bunch of kind of fairly low-level JavaScript primitives. It gives you a sense of the perf of the browser. So I'm going to fire this up.
Okay.
And for those of you who are real SunSpider aficionados, if you take a look at the screen when you run this, you'll notice that we're whipping through these numbers a lot faster than 8 was. We're still pretty early in the development process. There's some stuff we know we can still squeeze out of the engine, but we're doing a lot better than we were, and a lot of that is due to some of the low-level architectural changes, probably one of the biggest of which is that we now generate native code. Mm. But to talk about that, I'd really like to kind of hand it over to Steve Lucco,
right on,
the architect on this. And so, Steve, over to you.
So what makes those demos work?
Yeah.
I guess is the question for me.
Sure.
So first of all, we have several principles that we used when we designed the new engine.
Mm.
In addition to getting great perf, competitive perf, we wanted to be able to maintain great compatibility with existing websites. We wanted to make sure that there was excellent security in the browser. We also wanted to make sure that there was a lot of transparency, so if people were writing JavaScript code and they wanted to figure out, well, why is this running slow or why is this running fast, they could do so. They would have the instrumentation in easily accessible in the code to do that. So those were some of the other principles that were key in designing this thing.
Mm.
And then in terms of performance, there are a few things we did. So the basic thing we did was that we changed the object model. The former the engine, the IE8 engine, it was using COM variants as the sort of the core data structure, and interpreting over those. And some of you may know that COM variants are a little bit big, and so we've changed the object model to be where a basic JavaScript object is really more like a void star. It's either a tagged integer or a pointer to a small data structure called an object header, and then the object header in turn points at a slot array, which is an array of slots. Each one holds a property. Okay, because as many of you know, JavaScript is all about storing properties and retrieving properties.
Yes.
Okay. Once you have that, then the next thing you want to know is, well, for a given object, where is the property? Which slot offset is it at? And if you go and look that up in a hash table every time, which is what we were doing in previous versions, that can get kind of slow. So instead, we're using a dynamically evolving data structure, a hidden class, to tell us for a given object where, say, the X property or the Y property is located. And that gives you a much faster path in the native code. John alluded to that now we're also generating native code. So we generate native code, and there's a fast path. There's a thing called, in the industry, polymorphic inline caching, which simply means that instead of looking up which slot the property is every time, you see if the object still has the same dynamic type, which is also called hidden class. And if it does, you just run through the fast path, which is just a few instruction that goes and grabs that property at the same slot that it was, and that greatly improves performance. So in a nutshell, that's a lot of what we did, is that we changed the object model, and then we generated native code that worked really well with that object model. And then we put in a fast path, slow path kind of thing, where we would put a fast path in that most of the time at a particular code site, the object will have the same hidden class it had the last time.
Okay.
So those are some basic things that we did. And then finally, we did a lot of work on the libraries, and to be frank, we still have a lot of work left to do on the libraries. Things like string concatenation, things like array sorting, and so on. Each one of those needs some care to be brought up to a higher performance standard. One big thing that we did with libraries was we changed the regular expression library. Because one of the things about regular expressions is the industry kind of got to a certain plateau with regular expressions, which was characterized by the Perl level.
Okay.
So there was some releases from AT&T Bell Labs in the late 80s of regular expression libraries, essentially, that they released for free. And then people pulled those in to build things like Perl regular expressions. And similarly, languages like Python often use that generation. What was interesting to me is how things can go on at a plateau for a number of years, and then there can be a sea change in the industry. And that's what you've seen with the advent of JavaScript programming of the browser and the great energy that developers now have around that platform. We've seen this huge increase in regex performance, about 15 times what the Perl regular expression library can run at. Now the Google Chrome regex engine now runs, the eRegex, they call it. The Safari one, they're using native code generation to do their regex, and also ours now runs with similar performance. Some of the things we've done is that we've broken down classes of regular expressions, and detected them quickly when we parse the regular expression, so we can use much simpler, more direct methods, for example, for regular expressions that just contain direct strings than we would use for, say, things with back references.
Okay.
So those are some of the things we did, and we're still early on.
Yep.
It's going to be a while before we get to where we're ready to ship, but we feel very confident that we can ship with competitive performance.
So, okay, man. I mean, that's great. I mean, and again, you're very early on. But of course, one of the questions I would have is, what were some of the hardest kind of problems to solve? So, I mean, JavaScript is such an interesting slash strange slash weird language. When you're starting to compile it, and as you're mentioning your new native, you know, base types, what was that like? Give me just like a sense of what was like kept you going. Wow, man, what a weird language. What do we do here?
Okay, well, I do have to admit, JavaScript is a great mix of really useful features that make a lot of sense on the web, and then some really dark corners. So one of the great things about JavaScript is that its dynamic type system is a really good match for things like XML, HTML. When you have semi-structured data and you want to just pull it apart in little bits, you know, a dynamic language is very good because you can tack little properties onto DOM nodes and things like that. So there's a lot of benefits to JavaScript, but then there's a lot of funny stuff. Mm. So things that have made us most unhappy in trying to get good performance are things like the arguments array. So every function has a pseudo variable called arguments. And an interesting fact is that the and some of this is not even in the standard, but is just standard practice on the web. But there are things like you can say f.arguments, and it will give you the arguments for the innermost invocation of the function f, you know, regardless if you're in the function f. Uh-huh. And then if you pop that one, it'll give you the next innermost one. Mm. And so a naive implementation actually has to maintain this chain for each function of the vector of arguments that was pushed, which naturally for native code generation is very difficult for the stack layout to be efficient if you're doing that. So so it presents you with these challenges, and what we have this we have this phrase in the team, which I will paraphrase as the the oh darn mode.
Okay.
Where a lot of times what we do is we make optimistic assumptions, which are usually met, like, okay, in this function body, there will not be an arguments array because we don't see one explicitly because we've parsed the code. Of course, you can still refer to f.dart arguments even if f's body doesn't have the arguments from function y or function g or something. So so we have the oh darn mode where we back off to our interpreter and then rerun with simpler assumptions in order to that include, you know, manifesting the arguments array and so on. So a lot of what we do is try to have these optimistic assumptions and the usual fast path, and then be able to back off to these completely compatible and correct solutions as needed.
Excellent, man. So we just so people know in the audience, we will come and do some very deep stuff with this team when the time is right. I mean, they're really early on, so we gotta give them a break. So let's see some results that you have.
Yeah, sure. So the result of this run is at 986.4 milliseconds, and that's the aggregate amount of time it took the SunSpider to run through all of these tests. Now, that doesn't mean too much until you actually compare it to kind of some of the other browsers on the market. So why don't I quickly pop up a couple of earlier runs I did of Firefox 3.6 Beta 1. And this is Chrome 4.0 beta. So you'll see Firefox 3.6 is at 840.8 milliseconds. We're at 986, so we're just a little bit slower than they are. Chrome 4.0 is down at 437.2, so they're still doing a really good job. Now, I will point out, neither of those browsers is yet released. So it's kind of their early bits against our early bits, but that's pretty nice. And as long as we're kind of staring at the screen, the other thing that actually Dean called to our attention the other day was when SunSpider runs, you actually get these different characters up here at the top, depending on the browser you're coming in through. So it's kind of fun.
I wonder what that means.
I don't know.
So let me ask a question, because this is something that we started talking to with Dean over in our talks we had with him. And that is, so Google Chrome is down at 436 milliseconds, right? The question I would ask is, I mean, how fast does JavaScript really need to go to be useful? What kind of computations are we talking about here? I think that is important, because at the end of the day, it's a collective, it's an aggregate of all this different type of functionality that, in the end, is user experience. I want to check my mail. I want to write some mail. How do you guys think about that? Is it just, oh, we got to be this fast and move this bit here? I mean, let's think about that.
The way we look at it is we're the JavaScript team, so mm-hmm. our job, like, we're going to go as fast as we can.
Okay.
The user experience of the browser is composed of dozens of things that you experience, everything from how quickly the browser loads to its memory utilization to how quickly it renders graphics to table layout. There are thousands of elements that actually comprise the experience that a person gets off of kind of loading and running a page.
Mm-hmm.
When you actually get like harshly engineering brutal and attach a profiler to a browser and you watch, you get very different profiles of where the browser is spending time, which subsystem it's spending time in, depending on what the site is. Even two very similar sites, like two mm-hmm. news sites, you take MSNBC and CNN, you're going to get very different profiles of, hey, I'm spending, you know, this much time in the DOM and this much time in script and this much time in rendering and this
yep.
much time in layout and this much time in networking. And, you know, you hit the other site and those numbers could be, you know, the amount of time spent in script on one site or another, it, like SunSpider is virtually 100% in script. But
sure.
The typical site is no more than a third, usually down kind of 10, 5%-ish.
Mm-hmm.
So we contribute quite a bit, especially to more modern applications, like real applications that are mm-hmm. lots and lots of JavaScript. So you hit a site like the Office Web Companions, which is hundreds of thousands of lines of JavaScript code, and it's doing on-the-fly spell checking. Like, yeah, that matters a lot. You got to get your script perf up to make that work.
Mm-hmm.
You hit a simpler site or a site that's been optimized for an older browser, they're going to be a lot more sensitive about the amount of script they're actually putting in, and you're going to probably find a lot more time spent in rendering or layout or something else. So it's just tremendously, tremendously dependent on the site.
Cool. And so to I want to ask a question to the ranking individual in here. Shanku, who's the GM, who owns the group. What are we trying to do? When you think of it, you're just like, oh, we got to be as fast as Chrome. Is that your goal? You look at the board and go, not there yet, not yet. Or there's there something, you know, What goes through your mind? What are we trying to do exactly?
I think to me, performance is one dimension of. Ultimately, it's about the users who are using the browser to do more of their work on the web, and the developers who are building those experiences. And you know, ultimately, performance is one element of that to make that experience better for users and developers. But if you look at the kind of web apps or the websites that we were running like 10 years ago and you compare them to what you have today, it's tremendous to see the differences. Yet the web is this kind of collective thing of everything that's been kind of built up over the years, all of the content you have access to, all of the new applications you're running. And I think one of the big challenges to me is we're building a platform and an experience that works for all of that. And that works fast, that works securely, that handles a lot of the compatibility challenges. So you're still able to view that web page that you're mm-hmm. dependent on for your job or for that you want to get the information from. That we're doing all of those things in a balanced way, and that to me is kind of the challenge. And mm-hmm. big part of that is some really good fun stuff to kind of get the performance up.
Interesting. And so do you see, when we look out at the landscape, this will sort of be the last question because I know you guys are busy, and the question I would ask is, how are people using JavaScript as a language, as something to compose an algorithm? So, for example, in some sense, I see a lot of JavaScript in a web page being used to manipulate elements on the page, to play with the DOM, to play that game. But it's not like used to say what I do in C++, to like do some rendering of graphics and hard computation, super fast computation. So where do you draw the line? Do you see people actually using JavaScript in the future to do really complex algorithms, computation? Do you see that or not?
I think it's a mix of the interesting thing is JavaScript as a language is kind of grown up with the web,
mm-hmm.
and I would say scripting has grown up with the web.
Sure.
It turns out it's not just about JavaScript. Like one of the challenges that we're facing is when you go look out at the web, there are other scripting languages like VBScript.
Ah, VBScript. I was hoping I'd get you to say that. Okay.
VBScript, you think, like, who uses VBScript anymore, right? Well, it turns out there are actually some well-known popular sites that you could go visit today mm-hmm. that when they detect IE, they actually use VBScript. And,
wow.
And we're having to deal with that when we think about compatibility and, you know, getting our engine working. But, you know, JavaScript is basically, you know, it's evolved together with the web. And when I look at, you know, when we look at the web, it's what's amazing is just the sheer diversity of people doing interesting things on the web, whether mm-hmm. they're, you know, building applications, whether they're people putting out cool, you know, ray tracing apps, there are people building little frameworks and, you know, some of them that are in lots of popular use, mm-hmm. or people just using JavaScript as little things for, like, you know, mouse overs or
sure.
stitching together little things. And I think the interesting thing about JavaScript in the web platform is it's got to kind of, you know, handle that multitude of stuff. And you know, it's here, and mm-hmm. there isn't a good, you know, good reason to kind of go change it all out.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we're kind of all in it together, both building the runtimes and then working with developers and users to go evolve the language to keep meeting their needs.
Excellent. Well, hey, thank you guys for your time. And I look forward to coming back and get Steve on the whiteboard, and maybe we'll bring Eric along. We'll do one of those expert to experts with Steve.
That sounds fantastic.
I think people would love that. Great job, you guys.
Thank you very much for your time.
Really awesome. Thank you.